Welcome to Chair Chats, an online web series hosted by me, Jamie Harrison, the chairman of the South Carolina Democratic Party. Our goal in this series is to begin to look at political leaders, activists, and people involved in politics in a three-dimensional manner. We will move past the political caricatures to get to know the individual. So now, let's chat. Welcome to Chair Chats. We're quickly approaching the 2016 election cycle. And this year, the South Carolina Democratic Party has two young superstars running for Congress. One played football at Carolina and served as the right hand to Vice President Joe Biden, and the other is a young superstar attorney, Fran Person and Chris Fedele. Welcome to Chair Chats. Hey, guys.
Hey, nice to be here.
It's so good to have you on Chair Chats today. So, let's first go to Fran. Yeah. Fran, you worked for Vice President Biden, and you're back in South Carolina running for Congress.
Yep.
What inspired you to do this, man?
Look, it was a big decision for me, man. I got a young family. I got two beautiful young girls, a five-year-old and a two-year-old. So, the decision to run for Congress, I didn't take very lightly. But, as you said, I worked for Vice President Biden, and, I got to see firsthand a Congress that doesn't do too much.
Yeah.
They spend more time fighting with one another, and nothing gets done. One thing Vice President Biden used to always tell me, it always stuck with me, was, he'd tell me, Franny, you never question another man or woman's motive. Question their judgment, but never their motive. Because when you question their motive, you find it a lot harder to work together and get anything done.
Yeah.
The problem up in Washington right now is that's what we got. We got everybody, if you don't agree with everything I say, then you're unpatriotic or you're not Christian. People are up there, our congressman's up there, some ways, he serves an extreme ideology rather than the people of his own district. So, after a while, it kind of started eating away at me,
yeah.
I figured, it's like the old saying, the price all good men and women pay by not getting involved in politics is being governed by people lesser than themselves. So I figured, not to use a football thing, but it's time for me to get off the sidelines, man.
Yeah.
To get in the fight, and that's what we're doing,
Well, friend, you worked, Vice President Biden is known in D.C. as that guy who can bring people together,
yeah.
Who's respected by both sides, both parties across the aisle. President Obama usually sends the vice president to Congress in order to work a deal out, to move things forward.
I know I was there for some fights,
yeah.
But for Vice President Biden, look, it's an incredible guy, It's all about relationships. It's all about, getting to know the other person. You don't have to agree with everything they say, but it's about finding that common ground.
Yeah.
It served him well, whether it's in the, in the United States Senate as vice president, as a senator, as the chairman of foreign relations, or the vice president dealing with leaders overseas.
Yeah.
It's all about trust. It's all about, building those relationships that when it's time to actually sit down, work together, that you actually can get things done.
Yeah.
It takes teamwork to get anything done. You need a partner on the other side.
That's very true. One of the things that was quite interesting, just a little presidential politics, recently, I guess Speaker Boehner, now since he's no longer Speaker, feels as if he could just say whatever he wants.
Yeah.
When talking about Ted Cruz, he had some, he basically called him Lucifer in the flesh and had some other colorful words to say about Cruz. But I also remember that Mick Mulvaney was one of the leaders to help push the that first coup against Speaker Boehner. I wonder what he would say about Mick Mulvaney in that. But you don't have to answer that. When I bring Boehner on the Chair Chats one day, maybe I'll ask
him. He'll be right down here, I'm sure.
Well, Chris, you recently graduated. You're now practicing. Why did you decide you want to run for Congress this year?
Well, it was something I always wanted to do because service is a value that runs in my family. I come from a military family, three generations of Army officers that came before me. And growing up in that environment, it was not an option or a question. It was, how will I serve? How will I find my best way to do that? And just over the course of my education and life, I decided that getting involved in politics, helping to change laws for the better, for us to have a better country with better laws that helps the people, you know, that would be the best way for me to serve if I ever had the opportunity to do it. And then, you know, when that opportunity came, I didn't ask too many questions. I said, let's do this. You know, I have been blessed to know the right people and to have that opportunity and to have spent my time cultivating, I guess, the skills and knowledge that it takes, I think, to be an effective advocate and to work for the people in my district.
Well, that's great. Guys, I'm going to be frank with you. You know, here in the South, and not only in South Carolina, but I think you would say this is across the board in the South, it's almost like finding a dinosaur to find young white men who would be willing to run as a Democrat, you know, not only for Congress, but for anything. What do you think that we can do as a party to get more, you know, to again break this chain that we've seen recently, this divide within, you know, partisan politics where ethnicity and culture is aligned with political, you know, political identity? I think the two of you are terrific candidates, amazing profiles, amazing experiences and backgrounds, and I think you can be an inspiration to bring more people into the party. Well, what do you think that recipe is for not only the South Carolina Democratic Party, but I think parties all across the South, to bring younger people back into the party?
I think, well, so I just spoke at my old high school. This past week, I got to go speak to their AP government class. And one of the things, one of the biggest trends is lack of party identification, and they tend to merge the values that come from both parties. They tend to value, people, you know, in our generation tend to value things like equality and opportunity at the top, but they also value things like personal responsibility and accountability, which a lot of people love to say, you know, I am socially liberal, but I'm fiscally conservative or something like that. The trends of the next generation coming in are pointing in that direction, but they do put, I think, more democratic values. The edge goes to us, and they vote, you know, in the past elections for Obama, obviously, overwhelmingly for Democrats. So I think they're moving in our direction. I think with, you know, the generation that grew up with the internet, with amazing access to information that's unprecedented in history, they're beginning able to see and take in perspectives that are different from their own. So these barriers that have been drawn up by society historically are lesser and lesser the more information spreads.
You have to get engaged in order to bring about some change that matters. This election is going to be a very emotional one. You see it at the presidential level too. I mean, this isn't about Democrat, Republican. You know, to be honest with you, you know, this is about that husband and wife sitting at that kitchen table, for real, at the end of the month, looking at a stack of bills, their rent or mortgage, their credit card bills, their car loan, their student loans they're still paying off, in our case, 10 years after the fact. It's about staring at your two kids. For me, you know, looking at them, trying to think about how am I going to save up enough money to get my kids to college, knowing that, you know, a post high school degree is the only thing that's going to get some of these jobs in the future. Yeah. How am I going to save up enough money, you know, to take care of my parents? How am I going to save up enough money to put myself in a position where my kids don't have to take care of me? It's about that husband and wife and putting them in a position where they can look at each other and say, hey, yeah, we got this. My wife's my hero, for real. My wife grew up in Columbia. You know, she's got straight A's in high school. She went to Richmond Northeast. You know, I mean, she earned a Bonner scholarship to go to Wofford, got full Pell Grant. She's the first person in her family to ever go to college, to graduate from college. So, you know, she took out as much student loan as she could. She took out credit card bills. 10 years later, we're still paying off those student loans and credit card bills. I mean, it's amazing. It was worth it. But, you know, I don't know how some families do this. I was lucky enough to have a full football scholarship. Yeah. But some families got to pay for, you know, two sets of student loans. You know what I mean? In my district, these numbers are staggering. 73,000 families in my district alone that live below the poverty line. Of that, there's 51,800 working-age women in my district that live below the poverty line. 14,000 of them are children. You have 75,000 high school dropouts. 150,000 residents in my district. We're talking about my district, the 5th Congressional District, that have a high school degree only. Do the math. That's 225,000 residents in my district that have a high school diploma or less, knowing that these jobs of their future are going to require more education. You know, that's what this is about. This is about bringing the jobs, attracting these jobs. Where are these jobs coming from? Bringing jobs back to the United States, back to South Carolina, into my district.
Yeah.
That's how you rebuild communities. You know, that's how you rebuild families. And again, another piece, you know, you have women. Women are, as they say, are half the sky. You know, women in the workforce in modern families is very, very, very important. You know, it's not just about the husband's salary, it's also about the wife's salary. It's about, it's past time for equal pay for equal work.
Yeah.
Mulvaney's against that. I mean, I don't know where these guys come from, but and not only that, I mean, look, if I don't say this, I get in trouble with my wife as well. But this is also about, you know, providing paid maternity leave. A woman should not be in a position where she's got to choose between her job and raising a family or having a family. I mean, some of these things, it's about family security, but it's about a job. It just doesn't matter if you're Democrat, Republican, if you're black or you're white. That's what this is about. You know, we need to put our people, our businesses, our state back into a position where we can compete again.
Yeah.
And if we can, we'll win. But it's going to take leaders to go up to Washington to work together. It takes teamwork to get any of these big things done. But it can be done.
How do you guys, what are your solutions to tackle some of this anxiety that folks are facing? I mean, it's, you know, I think this presidential election, particularly on the Democratic side, has really focused on a spotlight on the issues of economic anxiety that are felt not only by, you know, single families with single parent families, or but young people. Do you guys have any interesting ideas that you think that Congress should think about in terms of moving forward and giving people a path forward?
Well, particularly when it comes to economic opportunity and securing jobs, you know, you can't talk about education without talking about jobs, and jobs without education. They're critically interwoven. And we have a gap in my district between advanced manufacturing jobs, jobs that require technical skills and computer skills that don't require a four-year degree, but the infrastructure is incomplete and it's not in place for us to have technical programs in high school and to continue to facilitate two-year degrees like at our technical colleges and our community colleges. Things that put education and quality jobs and quality middle class life within the reach for people that maybe come from very difficult circumstances. So in continuing to improve programs like that that increase access for people that have not had access to opportunity the way many other people have had in the past, I think that's a big building block for us. And it's a way for us to go forward and escape sort of the cyclical poverty that we see, especially in a lot of rural areas in our districts.
Exactly what you said with education is huge. You know, to provide access. If you can't afford it, you can't access it. But it's about early education. It's about middle school. It's about high school. It's also about lifelong education. Like Chris said, this isn't just about four-year college degrees. Our community colleges and technical schools are the best bang for the buck in the United States. You can graduate from a technical college, a community college, and have a $60,000, $70,000 job waiting for you on the other end. But this is also, you know, it's also about some of the things we need to do in Congress as far as ending these sequester cuts that our current Congressman, my current Congressman, Mick Mulvaney, fought for.
In your district, how has it impacted the 5th Congressional District?
It gutted the Defense Department. It gutted Shaw Air Force Base. I'll take you down to Sumter. Mick Mulvaney just recently said, hey, I've been all around the district, I've been all around the district, you know, and nobody's brought up the budget. You haven't been down to Sumter. Go down to Sumter. It's not just the men and women in uniform that are fighting all these wars. It's not about the government contractors. It's also about the economic impact that Shaw Air Force Base has on Sumter, about all the businesses that surround it. I mean, that's what this is about. You know, Mulvaney, again, Congressman Mulvaney, he's for some of these, he's a big free trade guy. You know, he's for some of these free trade. We've seen that movie before in my district. We watched the manufacturing, the textile mills pack up and move overseas. You know, I'd be against that. We saw what Congressman Mulvaney did with the Ex-Im Bank.
Yeah.
Fought for the against the Ex-Im Bank so it wouldn't get reauthorized. That's not just Boeing down in Charleston. It's not just GE. That's outfits up in Gaffney, Carolina Cotton Works, Fort Lawn, Fort Mill. I mean, these are all jobs. Again, it goes back to the whole piece. This is about getting, look, government's not going to solve everybody's problems.
Yeah.
But it's got to understand the problems that the people in our district are going through. Part of that is going around, getting to know people, talking to your principals, talking to the county councilmen, the people that are doing the real work in the district.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, all politics is local. Tip O'Neill said that, you know, and it's true. But it's about getting around, understanding the needs of your district, and then going up, knowing where you come from and what you're fighting for.
So you have a congressman that's worked on sequester and shutting down the government. You have a congressman that focuses on, you know, immigration and Benghazi. Mm-hmm. What are the things that you want to focus on in terms of as the next congressman?
There's a lot for us to focus on, and that's it's just that it's what you choose to focus on. Even putting Benghazi aside, just as it is, I think it's difficult for people in our district to imagine how the Congress, how this committee can spend $6 million and take longer than it took to investigate 9/11 to turn up nothing. And meanwhile, this is your congressman that's supposed to be representing you, and he's not doing anything for his own district. The things I want to talk about are things that affect people's daily lives. Coming from a military family, veterans have so many fair weather friends. You know, everyone loves veterans and talks about them and glorifies them when they're campaigning. But then you get to Congress and things don't match up. All of a sudden, they're an afterthought. That's something that I would like to change. It's something that I would make my personal mission, because it's something that is deeply personal to me, growing up in a military family and growing up without a grandfather who sacrificed for his country in Vietnam and coming home with Agent Orange exposure. So fighting for veterans, fighting for issues like criminal justice reform, which is something that has bipartisan support, that people on both sides of the aisle understand that we don't need to be locking up millions and millions of our own citizens. We don't need to be the number one jailer in the world. We don't need to spend billions and billions of dollars a year on incarceration, which does not make us safer, does not reduce drug rates, does not reduce crime rates, and in the meanwhile really has a very meaningful, hurtful impact on our communities. Fixing those two things, those are the issues that are near and dear to my heart that I would like to fix as a congressman. And then, of course, we got to increase opportunity and jobs. And that comes with having a better education system, one that is more, it's better supported, and one that focuses on training people, preparing them for the jobs of today.
So, Fran, you played football at Carolina.
Yeah.
You played for, let me get this right, both Lou Holtz and Steve Spurrier?
Yeah.
I mean, two legends in college football.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that experience. How are they different? You know,
They're different in many ways. Different style. Every coach is different.
Yeah.
But they're same in the basic core values that they would preach. I mean, it was family. To be honest with you, that was the one thing that attracted me most about coming down to South Carolina was my teammates.
Yeah.
I mean, it's about teamwork.
It's teamwork.
It taught you the value of hard work. And that it takes teamwork to get anything big done,
yeah.
You know. But again, take it back. I come from a big family, you know. I got five brothers and a sister. You know, we all played sports. What got us to college? You know, that's what got us the opportunity to college. But four of my brothers played at the Naval Academy, and for me, it brought me here to South Carolina. But I mean,
do you stay in contact with the coaches and your?
You know what? I've had to. Really, it's a privilege. I feel very lucky. I feel very blessed to have had some very, very good mentors, whether it be my football coaches from Lou Holtz to C. Spurrier, to a lot of the assistant coaches as well, the strength coaches, to Vice President Joe Biden.
Yeah.
You know, they've taught me so much. They've taught me how to believe in myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I told Coach Holtz that one time. You know, in a letter afterwards. I mean, he's a big letter guy.
Yeah.
You know, he's not big with email. You write a letter. And I say, you know what, Coach Holtz, you know, for you, you took a shot on me. And, you took a shot on me, and for me, it's made all the difference in my life. You believed in me when you know, and to be honest with you, that it inspired me and got me to move,
yeah.
You know, it made a big impact on my life.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's the same thing that I try to preach with my daughters. You know, you always believe in them. You'll always empower them that they can do anything, that there's nothing they can't do. You know, I think that's, for me, that's really important.
Yeah. Chris, some would say you're probably one of the most serious 26 years old that they've ever met.
Gotta be.
But I'm sure there's some things that you do in order just to let your hair down and have a little fun. What do you do in order to relax?
Yeah, well, I love being outside. I'm a lifelong soccer player, so yeah. that's sort of, you know, that's like my happy place when I'm out on the field in the sun, enjoying some South Carolina weather, and being on a team. The team aspect is big for me. When I was at USC, I played on a soccer club there. It's called the International Football Club, and it's composed of students that come from all around the world. To USC, and we unite together to play, you know, to enjoy the beautiful game together. So, you know, I got to play with students from from the Middle East and from Europe and from Africa, from South America, Latin America, just all over the world, and experience this. It's not only do we get to play good soccer and win some championships together, but we also, you know, brought together the whole world to me. You know, of all races, religions, everything, all came together in one place. You know, you go to soccer practice and hear six different languages being spoken. And that understanding, that ability to bring people together from all over the world for a common, you know, for a common purpose, for a language that we all speak, that's something that, you know, just an experience that was so valuable to me that I continued to do it even during law school, which some people might argue against, but, you know, it was just that important to me that I stuck with it.
That's awesome. Fran, you traveled all over the world with Vice President Biden, who has to be one of the most interesting, caring, political. I think Vice President, in terms of his style of politics, it's a dying breed in politics. You don't find people like him much anymore. You don't find the statesman like Joe Biden much anymore. Give us a sense or tell us some story or some anecdote of a moment that you often think back to and you chuckle about in terms of your experience with the Vice President.
Well, I'll be honest with you, you don't get those jobs by telling the stories.
Touche. Huh?
But I'll be honest with you, working for him, there are very few people in politics that have ever served in public life with more character and integrity than our Vice President. I mean, go ask Lindsey Graham what he thinks of Joe Biden. You know, he's a guy, South Carolina knows Joe Biden very well, whether it had been Fritz Hollings or Strom Thurmond.
Almost
sat next
like
to both of them. Yeah, for a long time. For me, it was really the exposure that he provided me. Not just the people, but also the places we were going. Like you said, we traveled the world. Been to Iraq 6 times, Afghanistan, Pakistan, whether it's Europe, China, Latin America, Africa, you know, the exposure was incredible. But I guess if I ever had to say something that was, you know, get me in trouble with him, and I always try, you know, it's funny. One of the things that everybody used to bring up, and you know, in the re-election, you know, when they went to go re-elect, everything was BFD.
BFD.
and for him, it's like, you know, that was that. I mean, he was whispering something to the president, didn't know it was going to get picked up and go, you know, and like him, I mean, he's a father first, and he's a son first, and a brother first. And to be honest with you, it really did embarrass him. You know, he'd sit there and say, hey, look, if my mother was around, man, she would have let me have it on that one. But again, I mean, you know, there are so many stories that are near and dear to my heart.
Well, Fran and Chris, this has been so remarkable. It's been so great to get an opportunity to share stories with you, to hear about your visions for your district. I think the two of you give us great hope in South Carolina that we can be that shining city on the hill.
And so,
this is our year, and you two are two great candidates. And so we're fortunate to have you lift the banner up for not the party, but for the state and for the hardworking people in the state. It's time that we get some good members of Congress once again, and the two of you would be amazing. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you for being on Chair Chats.
Thank you.
And thank you, because you're always welcome on Chair Chats.